time to talk Sydney to Hobart Yacht Race. A fair amount of excitement building ahead of the race, but also some nerves. The forecasters saying this could be the most dangerous race since the tragic 1998 event. You might remember this.
There are 70 boats that have retired from this year's race. There are a total of 45 that are still racing. There have been 50 crew evacuated from six yachts, 42 by helicopters, both civilian, naval and police, six by the fishing trawler Josephine Jean, and two by the HMAS Newcastle.
Roger, we confirm that we have within 30 minutes one rescue chopper, quickly followed by another, over. Roger, out to you.
There have been two man overboard searches, one for the crew member off Kingurra who was successfully retrieved, and one for the crew member from Sword of Orion who is still missing.
Well, I'm sure you'll all remember those tragic events. Six competitors lost their lives. It also changed the way that race was run. I'm joined this morning by two men that remember that time very well. Ian Kiernan is a veteran yachtsman and founder of Clean Up Australia, of course. He took part in the 98 Sydney to Hobart as skipper of his boat, Canon Maris. Is that correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And Tim Stackpole was a friend of the late Jerry Shipper, who became a boat safety advocate after a brush with death during that very race. His story is a particularly incredible one, and we're going to hear about that this morning. Ian and Tim, welcome to breakfast.
Good morning to you, Hamish.
Can you just take us back to that race, Ian? Did you know anything of what you were about to head into?
Well, it's always a danger, that race. It's the most formidable bit of ocean I know. You've got the East Australian coast current sweeping down. You've got the Great Southern Ocean current sweeping across into shallow water. It's not a very good recipe. You don't get big breaking waves. You get cliffs to sail off. And there's nothing worse than feeling yourself weightless in the dark, waiting for that crash as you hit the bottom of the wave and hear the rig try and shake itself out. It's not much fun.
Your boat did manage to finish that race.
Yeah.
What do you put that down to?
Can I take responsibility? No. It's a very tough boat. It's Tasmanian-built, Huon Pine timber boat, very strong. Not as quick as the planing boats, but very reliable, and we've had a good record over the years.
At what point did you know that this was a very different race to the normal ones?
When the starter's gun went.
But in terms of things going bad,
I'd seen the weather pattern coming. I knew it was going to be bad, and then when I saw those storm fronts rolling through, I knew we were in for it.
Tim, is it Gary Fisher or Jerry Fisher?
Gary Skipper.
Gary, yeah. That was close. Gary Fisher written in there now. He was one of the entrants in the 98 Sydney to Hobart. You knew him well, but he had this incredible experience and brush with death.
Really. Yes, he was on board Ultimate Challenge. Middle of the night, he was working on deck. He didn't have any safety gear on, no buoyancy vest. He wasn't attached to the deck, and he got washed overboard. And he tells a story, he did tell the story, when he went overboard, he heard the call, man overboard, man overboard, and then found himself in the middle of the night in huge seas, and just wondering how this boat was going to come back and pick him up. He saw it disappear into the distance, and the waves, of course, as Ian said, they're like cliffs, so the boat would disappear and reappear as the waves washed over him. And then he said the adrenaline kicked in, and he had to think about how he was just going to stay afloat until the boat could come around and rescue him. But he had no EPIRB on him. He had no electronic positioning beacon as well. Those things weren't a requirement back then too, as you talked about one of the changes that were made. But then he remembered that he had one of those waterproof torches in his hand, and that's all he had to signal the crew to turn around and pick him up, because of course they couldn't see him. It was pitch black.
It's quite something to remember that in the midst of
Well, he was clutching it. I think it was the only thing he had. He was in the water for about half an hour, and it was a textbook rescue. And he always told this story. They turned the boat around, and he says they almost landed it, parked it on top of him, and not literally, of course. And he said they pulled up on his leeward side to the weather, which means the weather would then wash Gary into the boat rather than the other way around, which of course could have been disastrous. He could have had a boat crashing in on top of him. Now, Gary's not a small man. He was like 195 centimetres tall, yeah, almost 2 metres, but he must have been at least 140 kilos as well. So he was dripping wet, of course. Somehow they got him back on board, and not only physically challenging for the crew and for him, but I think they were all emotionally shattered after that too. And this is why Gary went on to become a safety advocate for so many years before his death.
Did he talk about that half hour and what he was thinking? I mean, you cannot reasonably think that it's going to turn out well when you're in that position, can you?
And again, I would ask him, I said, you know, were you in fear of your life at that point? And he said, look, the only thing I was thinking about, and he would always say the adrenaline kicked in, and all he wanted to do was stay afloat until somehow he got rescued. That's what he was thinking about. Look, I guess he was very lucky that it was only 30 minutes he was in the water, and doubly lucky that he had that torch in his hand. And, of course, that whole advertising and safety campaign was built around the fact that he still had that torch in his hand.
As you mentioned, he went on to become an advocate for, you know, safety changes. Is that the legacy that he has left behind? He sadly lost his life in a battle with cancer in 2010.
Mm, mm. Look, I think so. He was such a compelling speaker. You know, I always hear those big words that he shouted, man overboard, man overboard. And I used to see him at the Sydney International Boat Show every year. And that was probably for about 7 or 8 years he was a guest in that show. He did the presentations 3 times a day. And when his booming voice said those words, that's when I saw people turn their heads and people would come to the stage. And it was a compelling story. And even after he finished his presentations, people would still gather around him and want to ask questions, and there were photos being taken before the days of selfies, Hamish. He was very popular for that reason. But yes, look, that is his legacy. He was a terrific cop in the Victorian Police Force, pretty much resigned that position, I think, around 2000 or so. So well-respected in Victorian Police Service, but a terrific sailor. Look, he represented Australia in the Admiral's Cup as well. He was in the winning team, the winning crew that won the Sydney to Hobart, I think, in 86. So a tremendous legacy as a sailor, as a safety advocate, but also as a police officer.
Ian Kinnan, can you recall what it was like in Hobart when you did arrive there that year, and I suppose the full reality of what had occurred was becoming apparent?
Yes, there was a feeling of shock amongst the competitors particularly, and it had been a tragic event. And, you know, I've lost 13 mates now drowned at sea, male and female, and that's a lot. I don't want to be one of them.
How does that make you think about going back on the water?
I'll buy a farm, I think.
all jokes aside, though, it must be quite a significant thing to think through and process when you're considering going back and doing big races.
Yeah, but the sea respects no person, but it is also a magnet, and I have always been very powerfully drawn to the oceans. It's probably been the biggest influence on my life. I only say that when my wife's not here.
What is the draw? People that are sailors are a special kind of passionate about the water and about being on a boat.
Yeah, I had a conversation with a sports psychiatrist once. He must have found it interesting, but I said, I have this euphoric sensation when I'm on the ocean. I feel really fantastic. I really start, after 2 days, I really, really start to feel part of it. And I said this to the sports psychoanalyst or whatever he was, and he said, yeah, he said, that's because you're doing exactly what you're best designed to do. And I think it's probably right. That's why I had this empathy with the ocean and always have had.
You sort of, you've got an inner sea dog.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not quite ready for the farm yet.
Tim, do you notice that when you talk to sailors? What is the thing?
I think, you know, water covers the majority of the planet, and any sort of, even the solo sailors that sail around the world, you know, they talk about, they're just compelled and drawn to it, kind of like an author is compelled to write a book. They can't settle until they get the words down on the page. And I think these adventurers are very similar in that respect, and these sailors are the same. And in the same way, the way these guys who were in that 98 Hobart race, who came back and raced again and again, after being through such a traumatic experience, and notwithstanding the guys that lost their lives in that race, you know, 55 sailors were pulled to safety via helicopters during that race as well, and yet they came back and they sailed again and again. It's probably, there's an addiction there, Ian, and I've never and Hamish, look, I've never had the courage to do a Hobart race myself, and probably the crew would be too tired of my whining for me to consider doing it. But it's one of, as Ian said, it's one of the most challenging ocean races in the world because of the way those two seas come together, and the ocean is so unpredictable in that part of the world.
It's the most expensive way known to go third class.
We've got to wrap this up, but very quickly, when it comes to a race like this year's, when you do have these pretty dire weather warnings, is it actually a very different picture that's presented to the sailors because of the safety changes, the type of boats that are now in the race as compared with before?
Well, I mean, the weather briefings are always a bit scary, particularly when they're a very, very negative message. But you realise you've just got to get on with it and take that most expensive ticket.
It's interesting to note Matt Allen, who's the skipper of Ichiban, he's preparing two boats and he's going to launch one or the other depending on what the weather conditions indicate.
Nice budget.
We're going to have to leave it there. Ian Kinn and Tim Stackpole, thanks so much for coming in this morning. Really appreciate it.
Good morning, Hamish.
Have a great Christmas.